Coming to you live from a Lifetime original movie, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is a strong, independent woman who don't need no man, and this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 52, The Adventures of Sadness the Buffalo.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And today we're going to be interviewing Snoop Dogg. Again, he wanted to come back after the last time because he felt like there were a lot of topics we didn't quite yet touch on.
Also, we're pretty sure that he stashed a lot of weed in our house.
Just so much weed.
Lots of it. And he might have forgotten some.
That's probably why he's actually back.
Yeah.
I actually don't know where he is. He's not in the studio right now. He wandered out when I clicked record.
Yeah, I haven't seen him since he got here and got out of his chopped truck and came inside. And then he wandered off and I don't know where he is now. So Snoop Dogg is somewhere nearby, and hopefully will be popping by to talk to us about his new album.
Does he have one of those?
Yeah, that's why he came to visit. He's on like a book tour, but for an album. What do you call that?
Just a regular tour, I guess.
Just a regular tour? Yeah, so that's why Snoop Dogg's here.
And then in the second segment, we're going to do live reactions to Gin and Juice. Just going to listen to it.
Well, we're going to get a live performance.
We'll be on mic so we can be like, sick rhyme, yo.
Snoop.
Dog.
Doggy dog.
Because we really are into rap music.
We are. We are both rapists.
Yeah, I'm not touching that. Nope.
And we enjoy rhymes, both fresh and rotten. We like flow. Fluids should move in a flowy manner.
As they do.
Yeah. We like that about them.
Mm-hmm.
We like beats. Funky ones, fresh ones, hot ones.
We do, by Dre or otherwise.
Yeah, sketchy ones.
Yeah.
Any kind of beat we're down with.
Mm-hmm. They could be sick or hot. You may be able to combine those types of beat.
Usually when I'm sick, I'm also hot. I get my forehead
gets
kind of red.
But
then you also get chill, too, when you've got a fever. So maybe there are chill beats out there.
There probably are.
Snoop could probably tell us about that if he was in the studio.
Well, hopefully he'll come back.
Hopefully. I'm getting a little worried.
I hope he doesn't wander into the woods behind the house and get eaten by a wolverine.
That would be bad. Yeah. Like, I don't think we have proper Snoop insurance.
Well, hopefully his own insurance will cover that.
I don't think it does. I think that's on us.
I mean, he came over of his own volition.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure habeas corpus applies.
Sure. Well, okay.
Sic semper tyrannis.
Thus always with Tyrannosaurus.
That's Rex. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a law dealing with dinosaurs. It's very obscure.
Well, I guess we need to do something else until Snoop gets back.
Okay, so hopefully he'll be by soon, because I didn't plan anything.
Well, what do we do on this show that doesn't require any work?
Most of it?
Yep.
Well, no, it doesn't require any work for me.
Sorry, doesn't require any conscious thought.
Oh, well.
most of it. Yeah.
You want to go back to the old theme ballin' well?
All right.
Because I'm theme. Do, do, do. Theme ballin'. See, it's like that Tom Petty song, Free Fallin', only I changed the words around a bit.
One day, I will probably go to prison for allowing you to sing and then putting it on the internet. But that's right, this segment is Theme Ballin'. So, for our listeners, not just for me, what do we do? Again,
theme ballin' is where each of us comes up with a theme for a game, throws it at the other person, and the other guy's got to spitball out what that game might be. Just real on the spot, come up with mechanics, like a way it might look, whatever comes to mind based on the theme that given to them. So, like, I think last time we talked about cowboys was one of the themes that we did. So I said cowboys. Johannes talked about a cowboy game, and then nothing ever came of it because we fell asleep.
Yeah, and I gave you something about presidents of the United States.
Yes.
And no matter what you came up with, I would not have wanted to.
No, there was
make
no
or play.
I don't know if I'd come up with like an arena where the different presidents had to fight one another
in a world but where the presidential.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But see, the problem there is that Teddy Roosevelt wins every fight.
Every fight.
Yeah, and so like he's a massively overpowered card. So it's hard to balance that. And Martin Van Buren not taking much of anybody down.
Yeah.
Even if he was a wizard. So they call him the little magician.
Oh, but this is different from a wizard.
Yeah, but it's still the same.
Strong argument.
Is an argument that you have at a pub a bargument?
No, it would be a pubgument. You would have to have it at a bar for it to be a bargument.
Isn't a pub a subset of bar?
Depends on where you are geographically, you know, what the lingo is.
Oh.
If you were to call a pub a bar, in most of the UK, they'd probably make fun of you.
Mm. So what's the difference?
I think there the bar is just the bar, you know, the part at the front of the pub where you order the drinks.
It doesn't expand and encompass the entire building?
Right.
Oh, weird.
Which does kind of make more sense.
You're defending the English?
I hate to do it, but I like the word pub and I wish it were used more and better.
It's like I don't even know you anymore.
I know. It's like I don't even know me anymore. You want to kick it off? You got a theme in mind?
I got a theme in mind.
Good, I can take this time to come up with a theme for you.
Traveling circus.
Ooh.
Like with jugglers and stuff.
No, I gotcha.
They might have a ringmaster.
All right, it's called Road to Shangri-La.
For those just tuning in, we desperately want to review the Insane Clown Posse Quest for Shangri-La board game on the air, but
it's
like...
Quest. I thought it was Road.
But it's like... But it's like $200 on eBay. So if any of you have a copy or want to chip in, please. I want to do that episode.
Yeah.
I want to invite a juggalo into my house and make him play it with us.
Yeah, we have to do it at your house because I don't want to invite a juggalo into mine.
There is always a juggalo in your house.
Oh, no. Does one live in the crawl space?
Yeah.
Or is my wife secretly a juggalo?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Where did you think all of your money was going? It's toward face paint and... Hatchet Man tattoos. Really, I feel like picking on juggalos is pretty low-hanging fruit, but
yeah.
I don't feel bad about it.
No, me neither. Okay, so a circus game. Traveling circus game. Traveling circus is different from a carnival, right? There's no rides at a circus.
Sure.
It's just the performance.
We'll go with it. I think, let's go with that definition for this.
Like big top tent, you know, elephants and clowns. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not stalling, but this is my favorite joke, maybe. It's my favorite joke right now. So this kid goes to the circus, and he's, well, 6 or 7, whatever, it doesn't matter. Sits down front, the front row with his family, and there's this point where a clown comes out, and he's just kind of doing bits, killing time, being entertaining until the next act gets set up, and he starts doing some sort of not audience participation, but calling out people in the audience, like, "Oh, look at that guy's mustache! That guy eats a lot of peanuts," and picks on this kid right in the front row, and is just absolutely brutal. In this kid's mind, he's just like, "Oh man, this clown just embarrassed me in front of everyone in this huge circus tent." Mm-hmm. And I am devastated. And he swears to himself that he is going to go to clown college and become the best clown that there is. And he's going to get this clown back. And so that's what he does. His whole school career and up through high school, he's doing, you know, drama stuff, trying to get into the best clown college, get his acting chops up, be comfortable in front of people, you know, be witty and quick on his feet. And he goes to the best clown college there is. Come up with the name for a good clown college. It's not important to the joke. I just hope you'd have a good one on the top
nothing.
Of your head.
I have nothing.
And
I was
and
too
so
engrossed in the story.
Finally, he graduates from clown college and he has his diploma and he is a certified top of his class, amazing A1 great clown. And he finds the very same traveling circus that came to his town when he was a child. And he goes to the show and he makes sure that that same clown is going to be doing the show and he's going to get him back. And he gets a ticket and finds the very same seat he sat in all those years ago. And he waits and it happens. The clown comes out and he's doing his bits and he's picking on the audience. And he just zeroes right in on the kid, and who's no longer a kid, but a man and a clown. A clown man. A clown. And he's given it to him, and the clown, no longer child man, stands up, and he's ready, and he's going to get him back, and he says, "F*** you, clown!" My favorite joke right now.
That's a pretty good one. That's yep. You clown.
So in a traveling circus game, I'm struggling to figure out how to make this not just like Monopoly-esque. I don't really find like accrue the most money, you know, have the most effective circus, all that interesting. I'm going to say it's an attraction heavy circus.
Okay.
There are a lot of animals, you know, lions and bears on unicycles and elephants and dangerous things being wrangled by circus folk. And you are... Who's in charge of a circus? Is the ringmaster actually in charge, or are they just the guy who like runs the show?
I think the ringmaster is just running the show. I think there's actually like a circus boss above them, but I don't know what you call that guy. Maybe like just like the owner?
We'll just say ringmaster because it sounds better.
It does sound
better. The same game. Maybe sometimes they're the same guy. It's the same guy or gal this time around. And your job is to, I guess it kind of ditches the traveling part, but tough, is to make sure the show goes off without a hitch, but the hitches that tend to happen are like elephants stampeding through the audience and clowns being eaten by lions and a chimpanzee, you know, beating a tenant unconscious, a tenant, an audience member unconscious with the bear's unicycle, that kind of thing. And I guess those would have to happen on couldn't be a dice roll. Maybe it's a deck builder. Now it's a circus deck builder. You're all competing to build the most. Okay, so we can actually go back to sell the most tickets, I guess.
No, I like where you're going with it. Because you're competing to build the most dangerous circus, because that's how you...
Because that's how you attract people.
That's how you attract people. But you're also competing to do that well, having the fewest horrible casualties.
Right. But and how do you translate that into victory points?
You would have an amount of victory points for certain levels of danger in your attractions. So like a rhino might be worth say 3 because it's pretty dangerous, but it's also fairly docile.
Okay.
But like a bear, that's worth a lot more because bears are aggressive. Or like a shark tank that people swim in, that's worth quite a bit because like why? Everybody's dying for that.
Okay, so we're saying maximum on a given turn, maximum number of danger points on the board equal like you have to get enough up to be able to buy more things.
Yeah, well like
because you have to be able to throw.
You might need to translate it into money for buying cards, but that wouldn't be like a victory condition. Just having money wouldn't be.
So
any
you, you need money. You need to make money to get animals and attractions. But then how do those attractions translate into victory points?
The attractions could translate into it bringing people into your circus. They show up.
Okay.
And people who interact with a dangerous attraction and come out alive could score either they just are victory points in and of themselves or they score you fame for doing it.
Okay.
And then people who die are like a penalty.
Okay.
And so over the course of the game, your goal is to have process the most people through the most dangerous attractions with the fewest possible dying.
Okay. What's the end condition? Run out of victory point cards?
You could do like a similar thing to Dominion where, you know, once a certain number of cards have been dug through, it ends.
I like how I made you do the work for this once I got it out there.
Talented.
I like it in concept. I feel like it's missing something. You've got to run the most dangerous circus. So you're saying every turn you take, I guess, would be one town where you put on your show. So you start off, you'd have to start with a few attractions. There's got to be basic attractions, you know, like one elephant, one bear, and some clowns or whatever.
Right.
You probably have to have some stuff. So you have to have cards that balance, like there's danger points or whatever, like a bear is worth 3. You have to have attractions of some sort that play in that hand that balance the danger and the and the not, you know, and like what makes people get that? That's what we still haven't hit yet. Mm-hmm. What makes people get killed by the bear versus just enjoy the thrill of the show and make it out alive?
Yeah, that's...
there needs to be something to balance it, and there needs to be a random chance element, probably.
True.
Or a random chance elephant. I don't know how that would work, but I love the idea.
It's just frightening. You would need other cards in the deck aside from attractions, like things like, you know, workers and whatnot to set stuff up, or like clowns that could, like a clown might be a card that lets you draw cards because he keeps the people entertained long enough for you to keep your circus moving. And card, like what if there was like a pool of potential customers in the middle of the table, and like part of your turn is seeing how many of those you can lure to your circus, and then once everybody had had a turn and lured people from the center to their circus, then you kind of resolve what happens to those people as they move through your circus.
It's kind of weird because thematically it would say that all of your traveling circi are going to the same town at the same time.
That's a good point.
And it adds a little more player interaction, like you don't often see in Dominion style deck builders, where there's only occasionally player interaction where a card makes it happen. So I kind of like that. There's almost an auction for audience members, but I'm not sure how to make it work. I guess thematically is the problem more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So here's just a spitball of an idea. We'll stick with your pool of people in the middle.
Sure.
How do you auction for audience members?
Well, I mean, it could...
Their attraction. You know, like, you don't want too many different kinds of points, right?
Sure.
Because otherwise it just gets way out of hand. I figure you need the typical deck builder stuff. You need, you know, draw more cards, play and draws and actions. We'll use Dominion terminology.
Right.
So cards and actions and buys.
I mean, yeah, you could do like a typical... Like a kind of a base thing where each card you play, so the more cards you put out, the more people are attracted, just because your circus has a shitload of stuff going on.
Uh-huh.
And then you could also have certain cards that say take, that as their special rule, their rules text say, you know, attract two people to your circus, attract five people to your circus, whatever. It's just a number you balance off of.
Okay. So, I don't know. Still weird. Anyway, I think it could work. I don't know if it's worth building.
Yeah,
Yeah, the basic idea, you've got attractions that have a danger value, which has probably got to be offset, or you know, high danger value has got to be offset by a high victory point attraction value, I guess.
Something like that, and then, it's more expensive.
But then you would also need, you know, workers or handlers or whatever that are not interesting, so they drop the attraction value of your circus. But so you have to balance them against how dangerous your attractions are. And then you have to have money to buy attractions and hire workers. But I think your victory points at the end are like how many people made it alive through your circus. So there would have to be kind of a setup round and then a processing round where they actually, you know, your show goes on and you see how many people actually survived it.
Yeah, I'd play it.
Thanks for doing half my job for me.
No problem, man. Got your back on that one.
Well,
I'm like Yoda. I ride you around like a rented mule.
Oh my gosh, I saw this thing my brother sent to me. There's these comedy Twitter accounts that are emo Kylo Ren and lonely Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Did you see the fight between the two of them? Amazing.
Are we at the halfway mark? Do we need to swap over to the other game? Or?
Well, I need to give you a theme.
Oh, yeah, that's
what you mean.
Yeah. Theme ball me.
Well, I had an idea to give you a theme of Pork and Mindy, which is an unlicensed Mork and Mindy ripoff, except Mork isn't an alien. He's just a potbelly pig. He can't talk.
I don't know enough about Mork and Mindy to do that.
Neither do I.
Fair
enough. I mostly just liked the idea of Pork and Mindy. But yeah, neither of us knows enough about Mork and Mindy or Pork and Mindy to make that happen. So I actually have to think of a theme, and I didn't do that.
I wish Snoop was here so I had somebody to talk to while you were talking, thinking.
But he's not.
He's not. I don't know. Do you think he's coming back?
You know, at this point, the Wolverine's probably got him.
Pour him one out for Snoop.
Just all over the recording equipment. You monster.
This would be a good place to splice in like some electric zappy sound effects and have the podcast go dark and the episode just stops.
It just ends. That's it for this week.
Next week you come back with a new co-host and refuse to acknowledge I was ever here. The new guy's just terrified all the time. Like, was that okay? Did I say it wrong?
Did
please
I do
don't
it okay?
shoot me.
Can I talk at the microphone? Is it okay if I breathe on it?
I don't want to what happened to the last guy to happen to me.
What last guy?
Nobody. There was never a last guy.
All right, I'm going to give you a hugely general theme.
All right, I'm on it.
Based just on what another podcast I listened to. Not about board games, just it was the theme that's in my mind.
Beard games.
Oh, man, which one do I want to do? We'll do this one. Sibling rivalry. That's your theme.
Sibling rivalry.
Yep.
You're a monster.
I can tone it or pare it down a little bit if more specific is helpful.
Well, I mean, sibling rivalry. So the immediate thing I would think of is like do a stages of life thing,
mm-hmm.
where you all of the players are siblings, and they have to play through like childhood and then the teenage years and then this, that, and the other until the parents die of old age. The parents always make it to old age in this scenario.
Right.
But they have to compete to be best child.
Amazing.
And so like at various stages of the parents' life, various things will happen. And so like, you know, you might score some points by getting into a better college than your siblings. Like the sibling who gets into the best school or has the best career or has kids first,
mm-hmm.
you know, scores bonuses. But like two, you get bonuses for living in the same town as your parents.
Oh, nice.
So if you don't go...
So this is best sibling in the eyes of the parents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The parents are like, you know... Yeah.
Not necessarily worldly most successful.
Right, but yeah. Or like if the parents get sick, like the first kid to make it to the hospital scores.
Oh, man.
The most points. That kind of a thing.
That's really morbid.
The whole idea is pretty morbid. But you... But two, the other thing you would have to do is that you would need a randomized deck of things the parents care about,
mm-hmm.
and like the things that they want their kids to do.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You only reveal, so you say you deal out five characteristics that the parents are going to be concerned with in a given game.
Yeah.
You only reveal, say, three of them to the kids.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
And the other two are secret. So at the end of the game, you find out your parents really didn't care about your monetary success at all. No points for you for, you know, being a Mr. Big Shot lawyer.
Well, you could also have, like, on the back of the cards or somewhere, you could have, like, you know, the mom prefers, you know, this, dad prefers that, and maybe that's secret or only known to some characters.
Oh,
or,
nice.
or characters, like, players could have kind of randomly dealt attribute uh-huh. cards for them, like mama's boy.
Oh,
so you get
yeah.
a little more points for pleasing mom than for pleasing
nice.
Dad,
nice.
But a little fewer for
two,
pleasing dad.
If you're the oldest kid, like you might know more of their preferences just because you were there before they were good at lying to children. I mean, what? And two, you might, like if you're the oldest child, you might just get a bonus because clearly the parents always like their oldest kids better than the rest of us. Joking, parents who don't listen to the podcast. It's just a joke. We make the comedy jokes on the podcast here. Please don't write me out of your will. But yeah, that kind of a thing where like you're eight. Because like obviously, if the youngest player is starting as a baby, the oldest player obviously has to start above that.
Yeah.
You know.
Though, I mean, depending on how slowly or quickly turns go, like how much time you're saying each turn is, you could just say the first player is the oldest.
Yeah, yeah, but
and then the time elapsed wouldn't need to be you missed the baby phase. I mean, it could mm-hmm. be, but it wouldn't necessarily need to be you missed the baby phase. It could just be, you know, you're a baby by the time player two gets there, you're now five.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, that would work. You just advance the parents.
Yeah, I mean,
ages,
so you're, you'd
you
always be kind of evenly spaced, but I don't think it's enough of a
mm-hmm.
nitpicky detail to matter.
I kind of love this idea.
It is
kind
of interesting. So how are the mechanics working? Because
yeah,
you
that's
stand,
the hard part.
It's in danger of becoming the game of life.
Well, that's more or less how it has to go, because you need to have all of that stuff in order to make
well, sure,
it
but it doesn't
funny.
Have to be a roll and move, go around the board.
No. Wouldn't want to be that, but you would need to be able to make choices like mm-hmm. that. As you go, you might do like a player board for each player where you're putting down tokens to indicate what you're going for. And there might be a deck of cards maybe to randomize what options you've got.
What, by a player board, you mean kind of almost like Galaxy Trucker where you're like not necessarily on a timer, but trying to build your thing? Or do you mean a player board where you're moving, but you're not necessarily interacting with the other players?
Yeah, I don't know, because the not interacting with the other players part doesn't sound, very good.
Right. I mean, you could go, well, you could go deck builder again.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, you know, something card-based, but...
I don't know. You could do, like, well, part of it could work on, like, a worker placement model, because there's some things where if one child does them, they kind of block out the other kids from being that
mm-hmm.
entity. So, like, if I, you know, make a point of doing grocery runs for mom once I get a car, if you happen to have wound up as my twin brother and I get there first, it's like, well, no, that doesn't... I've got it. You can't do grocery runs.
Or if it's like, you know, one of the things that's out there is parents want their kids to be lawyers. And that's just like lawyers is a thing. Dad's a lawyer. You know, you should be lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one to get it gets, you know, gets extra points. Second one gets points, too. But you weren't the first one to do it.
But also not getting it at all is a big penalty, because dad's like, you weren't a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, so right. Like if you're the third one, you're like, well, I get squat for getting it. But I also get penalized for not, so crap, I guess I'm off to Harvard Law.
Unless you can swing it with mom on a different thing or like that. Man, this is really...
this would be an immensely complicated game.
I think we could make it work. I'm more thinking about like our parents listening to this and being like, what did we do wrong?
I think the moment our parents realized that we were trying to design board games and making a board game podcast, they asked themselves that question.
Yes, that is probably true.
I don't know, maybe you didn't have this experience over Christmas of your mom just looking at pictures of you as a child and sobbing. That.
What do you mean over Christmas?
The Mildly Alarming Podcast would like to let our listeners know that this has all been a large joke and we both have very loving and supportive families.
Who are probably disappointed in us, but still loving and supportive. We aspire to make toys. Nerdy, nerdy toys.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually, like, really made any yet.
We made some.
Well, we made them.
But, listen, like,
not
dude,
in a meaningful way.
I drew a crap load of cards.
That is true.
How many times have I redrawn that freaking game at this point? At least three.
More than three.
Well, I have been drawing and redrawing the same board game since the Carter administration.
When you were negative what?
Six.
Nice. Well, so that's Traveling Circus and Sibling Rivalry. Sibling Ribaldry.
No, that's a different game.
Yeah,
it's a very different game.
It's called Game of Thrones.
I was going to go with Saleable Only in the South, but that yours is better.
Gross.
Right? Are we at time?
Yeah, we are. We're really right on the hairy edge of this.
I don't have anything to add to Sibling Rivalry.
I guess... we'll be right back after this. We don't.
If you want,
I guess
you,
we can
get contact information.
Put things on usually? The internet. Yeah, we do.
We usually do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Do we want to do it now or do we want to just skip it?
Whatever. What do you want to do?
Think about crepes.
If you think Tom is a moron, you should post it on Twitter. Our handle is @mildlyalarming, and his is @mongrelidiot, and you should tell him that he is in fact a mongrel idiot.
You can also let us know what you think about my intellectual prowess at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com, which is an email address.
It is a Gmail address. Or you could post it in the comment section on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com.
Or you could just curl up real snugly under a pile of blankets and get a cup of the hot cocos, and I'll know about it.
That is super, super disturbing. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Dr. Slappy's Mystery Box, a groundbreaking new product.
This is a message from the real world. The Mildly Alarming Podcast is not real. You are in a coma. Please wake up. We miss you. Also, I only know half of the directions to where we hid the treasure. You gotta wake up, buddy.
Dogs can't hear it when you talk if you're in Norway, and you can use it to apply warm ground beef directly to the buttocks. No charge for the first 90 days or your money back. Order now.
Well, you may be able to watch Kid Rock flow like a breeze through the trees, but the Mildly Alarming podcast, not so much. We're a bit more like a just sort of a chubby kid on a park bench. I'm Tom Rich.
And I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's okay.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're glad you're here. We're happy you're back. We're glad you made it through whatever it is I just tried to do. Take it away, Johannes.
Does Kid Rock flow?
Yeah.
Like, what is that a reference to?
It's one of his songs.
Is it because he rap rocks? Does he call that a flow?
Yeah, he's flowing. Because it's oh, wait a minute. I'm about to flow. You like a breeze through the trees. You can watch me blow.
I've literally never heard that. What horrible Kid Rock song is that?
I don't actually know what it's called.
I wanted to distinguish it from the good Kid Rock songs.
Right, right. It's the one that he's been sitting there wasting time, drinking, smoking, trying to free his mind.
Weird. I have heard that song, but I have no recollection.
I might be misremembering the lyrics.
Probably not.
There was a guy who was a big Kid Rock fan at the hobby shop I used to hang out at and play Magic the Gathering at, and he would play.
I can't decide if that is complete nonsense or if that makes perfect sense to me. A hobby shop D&D type who loves Kid Rock.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense because it's a lot of white trash.
Huh.
They're like, oh, this is a cool, fun place for me to be, to me to hang out.
That's weird. Hobby shop. That doesn't make sense. I know that it's the case and I believe you and I've experienced it, but I don't understand it.
It's a strange world.
Because aren't they the ones normally who... They. Aren't they the ones who are normally like, you ought to be able to fix a truck with your bare hands?
No, not really, because like your
and
Kid
drink
Rock...
Faygo and wear faith paint.
your Kid Rock guys and your Juggalos and whatnot, they weren't really like the good at stuff crowd. Like because like the hillbilly crowd, they'd be more into like your pop country.
Okay.
Types of like back at that time,
sure,
a decade and a half ago, it would have been like the end of Garth Brooks' career, trending into when Toby Keith got big and Daryl Worley and those guys. So that's more what you're looking at.
Okay.
Whereas if you were the Juggalos and the Kid Rocky types, nerd stuff would fit in there because it's something you could do while reclining.
Okay.
Because you're not big on exertion because you're really high on either the devil's lettuce or maybe just spray paint.
Or gasoline.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like it's a little more, it's less good old boy, you know, kind of trailer person and more, oh my God, kind of trailer person.
Were they really terrible people to play D&D with then? Because I feel like that takes a fair amount of
I didn't really play D&D
mental engagement
with any of those folks, but like for, no, they were fine for like Warhammer or Magic or that kind of thing.
I always think of those things as like sort of fairly cerebral pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they are.
There's
like, you have to imagine stuff and do some math.
There's a fair amount of patterns, though, that you can just kind of flow into and just go with. At the level we were all playing at, like, it's not that.
I gotcha.
There's not that much to it. So that was some of my teenage years y'all just heard about a little bit.
Yeah. Mm,
fun times.
I pretty much just played D&D in your basement. That was my exposure to tabletop.
Tabletop is so much better if you just do it at a house.
Not
with
at
people
a hobby
you
shop.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hobby shops in theory are great. In practice, you're just like, why does it smell like vinegar?
And you don't want it.
And you don't want the answer to that question.
You do not want the answer to that question.
Like they perform an important social function in that they give people with nowhere else to go a place to go be enthusiastic about their hobbies, but I don't ever want to go back to that time in my life.
Listen, what you're smelling is vinegar, but what is fermenting is the thing you don't want to think
exactly.
about.
Exactly. There are probably some hobby shops out there that aren't that way, but they do have people crawl out of the woodwork from time to time.
Well, I guess it's nice of them to be accepting of those people. They need somewhere to go also.
They do.
Or,
Yeah.
We need somewhere to not go. Like we like the not going places.
We like to not leave where we already are. In an ideal world, we would be in a place and then there wouldn't be any other places we had to go.
Well, no. That we had to go. Okay. They're going to say there wouldn't be any other places because that would be bad because then all the other people would be in the place where we were.
Well,
and
no,
that
other,
is not ideal.
The other people could just not be.
Oh, that.
It could just be you and me in a house floating in an endless void.
I was going to say who would listen to our podcast, but the answer is that we would listen to our podcast.
Yeah, we would record it on Tuesday. you would splice it down Wednesday or Thursday, and then on the weekend we'd listen to it.
Yeah, together.
Yeah. Curled up under a huge Afghan.
I thought you said there weren't any other people. Couldn't do it.
It took me a minute. His name is Amir.
Wow. He sounds nice.
He's got a scruffy beard.
I don't think people from Afghanistan are called Afghans. Are they?
I think Afghan is an acceptable term.
Oh, well,
I think I've heard that, and I've heard Afghani either way.
That one I've heard. Though usually is an adjective, like an Afghani woman or man. Or
right.
Whatever.
But I think if you're just being like I think Afghan is like if you were to say three Americans walk into a bar, you know. Three Afghans.
Oh, okay.
Walk into a bar.
It sounds offensive, but so yeah. Does Mexican, and that's an okay word, you know, with the correct inflection.
Right, right. In context, obviously, yeah.
And you can't say a Mexican. It's just, or can you? See, they all feel bad because there are people who use them wrong.
Right, right. It's hard to throw down properly there. It's like how Jew is a term that you could legitimately use and be like,
oh,
yeah.
That's one of the ones
that Jews were there. And,
yeah, you go with like Jewish people, and then it's like, no, I'm clearly stumbling. Yeah. I'm clearly stumbling over my words.
But then if you say, you know, Jews believe this, you're like, nope, that can't have been okay.
But it's better than the Jews, or is it? It's not clear.
I think it's better than the Jews, but still,
a Jew.
But I think you're best off with Jewish people.
Maybe
if you want to be on the most solid ground, you can go with. I feel like that's the safest route.
Well, politically correct. Aware people, what are they called?
I don't even want to go down that road.
So my brother That's Matt, dark. What do we call these people?
How offensive has what we've been discussing so far been?
We've been asking questions in earnest. It's just because we're ignorant. I mean, because we don't know. Those words mean the same thing, but one of them sounds meaner. So what are we actually doing in this segment?
I think it was a booze in the news.
Oh, that's right. So I guess it's booze in the news. I had to say the name again because I stepped on right after Tom said it and the music had to go somewhere, and I don't feel like doing the work to edit it together otherwise.
So for those of you that are wondering just what the hell is going on here, Booze in the News is a segment where we find ridiculous news articles from around our internet, usually from the Reddit subreddit Not the Onion, and then we make jokes about them because that way we don't have to do a lot of work ahead of time.
And we've been drinking. That's where the booze part comes
in. We drink when we do the podcast. Like, that's in the name. Not in the name, but in the description. The gin and tonic part. So
I guess take it away.
Yeah, okay. So my first article for the night comes from independent.co.uk, which is, I guess, the Independent, whatever that is. It's some British thing. And the title is...
It's British.
It could be Britter.
It's certainly not the Britest.
It's Brit-esque. But the title is Man Arrested for Posing as Policeman to Stop His Dad Hiring Prostitutes.
I heard this... You told me the headline earlier, and... Policeman has a completely different... You've even said exactly the same way, knowing that it's coming from a British news source rather than an American one. Policeman is now an entirely different word in my head. Mm-hmm. I just realized that right now.
Hmm. Do you think of him as Bobby? Because you're wrong, because the article is talking about China.
Really?
A 20-year-old man has been arrested in China for pretending to be a policeman to stop his father hiring prostitutes. The man said he had dressed as a police officer on New Year's Day when he realized his father was planning to hire a prostitute after he called him asking for money, according to China News Service.
Who called who?
The father called the son asking for money to hire the prostitute.
Ah.
And so the son dressed up as a cop and tried to scare the prostitutes away.
So it wasn't the son being like, hey, Dad, Happy New Year, and the father was like, I need money. Or wait, no, wait.
That might have been how it went.
Whatever.
Down.
It doesn't actually matter. It's just that he called him. Was it in abundantly unclear?
Yeah. I think it's the father.
The son was like, hey, Dad, I need money. And the dad was, apropos of nothing, like, I'm going to hire a prostitute.
Right. That would be weird. That's
where I was trying to go before. And then it all fell apart.
Gotcha. So the apparently witness said the son had a taser that he had bought online to frighten a passing dog, which is what eventually led to the police being called on him.
How do you frighten a dog with a taser?
I think if you tase it.
I feel like then you have not just frightened it, but perhaps hazed it into unconsciousness.
I love the phrase "frighten a passing dog."
It's pretty great. That is it should be an album title.
Yeah.
The new EP from Exploding Whale, Frighten a Passing Dog. That's a band name I just made up.
Fair enough. But I feel like this is a good son. Like he's you know, looking out for his dad's interest. Dad is trying to hire a hooker. Son's like, that's not the best way to behave. I'll dress up as a cop and scare dogs for you.
Incredible.
So good on you, this
guy,
this Chinese person. That's how that would. That's right.
I think it's a Chinese.
I don't think that's right, but I can say with 100% certainty that we could not say Chinaman.
You just did.
No.
Oh no.
That was not the way to do that. All right. What have you got? To follow that one up with,
man,
now that
oh man,
we've offended everyone.
Well, the inescapable political scene here in the United States of America. Calgary born, that's just there. Like, he's from Calgary, he was born in Calgary, not a part of the article, except tangentially related. Presidential hopeful Ted Cruz faces potentially damning Nickelback accusation.
Well, that he's lost my vote.
This is from lost, implying he had it. Were you going to vote for Ted Cruz?
Yeah.
Were you going to, what's the word? I was going to say perjure, but it's not perjury, but I wanted it to be yourself. Anyway, were you going to commit fraud and pretend to be a Republican to vote in the Republican primary?
It's not actually fraud in Michigan. You just have to
You can just do it?
Yeah, we have an open primary.
Just one or the other.
You have to pick one or the other, but it doesn't matter which you're registered as, if you are at all. I don't actually know if I'm registered with either party.
Oh, I don't know if I am either. I've also never voted in a primary because I could not care less.
I 100% am sure you're not if you don't know.
Yeah, that's like, probably the case. Because like, you have to do something.
Because you have to donate.
Yeah,
really. That's
I
how
do.
That boils down.
Oh, you have to donate? I definitely haven't then because I did not do that.
I don't think they'll give you a membership card if you don't donate.
Yeah, I would never do that. Never, ever, ever. Anyway, the latest, this is from Edmonton Journal. The latest volley in the battle for the GOP's presidential nominations could be the most controversial yet. Texas Senator and presidential candidate Ted Cruz is accused of liking Nickelback. That's pretty much the whole story. It does go into two, this is what I really like about it, two cautionary tales of the toxic mixing of politics and Nickelback. That is a direct quote from this article. It refers to the Kroger or Krieger or Kruger. I don't know. The frontman from Nickelback's name is, I'm just going to call it Kroger because it's easier to say, is Chad. His name is Chad Kroger. And it refers to it as the Kroger curse. Canada's former prime minister, perhaps the country's most famous fan of the Boys from Hannah, suffered a decisive loss in the last federal election that can't not be attributed to the former PM's taste in music. Stephen Harper was known to be a fan of the band since at least 2010 when photos surfaced, blah, 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 who cares? Mm-hmm. I love the idea of a Nickelback curse.
That is pretty good.
Like, in the U.S., we've had quite a few presidential curse ideas thrown around. I think most notably the curse of Tenskwatawa, which has been called other things.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You do know what I'm talking about. You've probably not heard it called that.
Sure.
Which is also surprising to me. It's the idea that any president elected in a year ending in zero year of the circle will die in office. Mm. And it happened consistently, I think, up until Bush.
I believe Reagan was the
or
one
Reagan,
who broke it.
But he got shot.
He did get shot.
He
didn't die.
And then Bush just sailed through.
Somebody threw a shoe at him
no
that
shootings.
One time.
Yeah, that's true. So, but I love the idea of a mod, because that came from back in the...
It was a long time ago.
It was 1900s at that point?
It would have to be 1800s.
That's what I thought.
Because Lincoln elected in 1860.
Yeah, that's right.
In the head.
Man, who was it? I have to go back to 8th grade history to remember who actually was president at the time. And he wasn't president when he was supposedly cursed. He was like in a military position and was in some way dealing with relocating Native Americans when he was cursed. And then he did become president or something like that. I don't recall.
Right.
No. Terry Caputo,
it could be words are failing me. Taylor?
That sounds right.
Because Zachary Taylor was a general and I believe was involved in some breed of of aggressive handling of Native Americans, and he died in office from eating a bowl of cherries and milk on a hot summer day.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. Did you know that the air conditioner was invented because of a sick president?
Which sick president?
I don't remember.
Fair enough.
But much earlier than you would think. Like, the first air conditioner was... It might even be mechanically run, and it was basically just running water through pipes, but basically used the same, like, try to wick heat out of the air inside and move it outside through copper pipes and fluid of some sort.
Hmm.
Because of a sick president, and it was too hot, and he couldn't get his fever down.
They had fax machines in the Civil War.
Yeah.
Primitive ones, but... They had fax machines before. The
fax machines in and of themselves are fairly primitive.
Was invented before the telephone is really the gist of that.
Wow.
So the point is, history be whack, yo.
Yeah.
I picked that phrasing up from Snoop Dogg.
So anyway.
Who still has not come back.
I want to come back to the next Canadian or North American, I guess, if it's spread to Ted Cruz, who is kind of Canadian.
He's born in Calgary.
Yeah, right. That whatever
makes him
kind of Canadian.
That makes him half moose.
He's Canadian-ish. It doesn't work with that word. I want to see. I want to see if the Nickelback curse sticks.
All right.
What do you got?
This is from Popular Science, popsci.com. Airplanes hit more turtles than drones.
I have questions.
Such as?
Airplanes hit more turtles than drones hit turtles, or airplanes hit more turtles than airplanes hit drones?
It's actually both.
Please tell me that's true.
No, that was a lie. The FAA announced that any unmanned flying vehicle heavier than half a pound would be registered to the government by February 2016 in order to protect planes. But it turns out if the FAA really wanted to protect planes from small autonomous unmanned objects, they'd ban turtles first. At least it's the article of some economist, blah, blah, blah. It turns out that airplanes run into turtles more often than they plow into drones. Now, that's a nonsense argument because there are more turtles than drones, and drones are new.
And also, how often do turtles damage the airplanes, and how likely are the turtles to damage the airplanes versus how often and how likely are drones to damage an airplane? Like, it's clearly already set in place to protect the airplanes. Mm-hmm. I doubt if the turtles are doing much damage. Unless they're flying turtles that they're not telling us about.
Apparently, the guy picked turtles because turtles are funny. You don't think of turtles as posing much of a threat to planes, and they don't. If we've hit turtles 198 times, that's in his data set he's looking at, and drones 0 times, then maybe we're worrying too much about collisions with drones. So his argument is less that... we should ban turtles and more. Hey, it's not a big deal if a plane plows into a small thing. I don't know if I buy that, because if I am a plane and I hit a turtle, I'm hitting that turtle with my wheel.
Yeah, I would have gone with ducks or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ducks are funny. Duck is a funny word.
Duck is a funny word. And apparently, earlier studies have shown that drones under 3 pounds show no more risk to airplanes than small birds.
So then the question becomes, how much risk to airplanes do small birds cause?
I don't know. Sometimes they crash because of them. Sometimes they have to make emergency landings. I've read about it from time to time.
Okay. That's legitimate.
I feel like you should keep drones away from airports, just in general.
Yeah, probably.
Just because, like, I feel like even if you were to prove to me that drones near an airport weren't a risk, I feel like if you are the kind of person who is like, no, I want to fly my drone near the airport, it's not a risk,
you shouldn't have a drone.
Well, no, I immediately want to put legal limits on you because I don't like you.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't speak well of me.
No.
But if you're that person, I want to force the federal government to intrude on your life.
That is how I feel about the majority of drugs. Like,
yes, philosophically, you should be allowed to do meth. But because you are who you are, I don't want you to be allowed to do meth because I personally dislike you and it would make you happy to be high on meth right now.
Precisely.
Really, this podcast isn't doing much for our credibility at all, is it?
That doesn't hurt our credibility. That was outright truth.
Character?
I feel like that speaks well to my character.
but yeah, no, I it's the same idea. Yeah. Did you hear about that stuff where, like, in California, when they were having all those wildfires over the summer, or maybe they still are, I don't really know, like, several times they had to pull tankers away from the fire because there was a drone nearby, and the pilot's like, I can't fly near that. Like, I can't see it. It's dangerous for me to be there. I can't safely fly my plane because there's some dude flying his drone nearby, taking pictures of the fire and doing zip-bys of my helicopter or whatever.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I had not heard about
that. It's like there was a thing where they were trying to quick pass laws against it so they could at least, you know, do something about the drones.
Yeah.
At least prosecute the people.
Well, the thing is, drone is a word that needs to be defined better, mm-hmm. because I believe, technically speaking, a drone is only an autonomous aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So the quadcopters that people are flying around are not drones because they're being flown? I'm not sure if that's true.
Yeah, the terminology isn't... The technology is advancing faster than the terminology, and it's getting into consumer hands faster than the terminology is keeping pace with it. But if you're flying your little helicopter around, maybe don't interfere with emergency services personnel.
Yeah, that's just simple.
I dread the day when, and it's probably already happening, when, like, drones are being flown by news organizations to, like, disaster scenes.
Oh, it's happening already.
Or so, like, you're trying to EMT up and, like, put a guy's face back on after he was in a car accident and get him in the ambulance, and, like, there's a drone hovering
by, like,
your head.
You've got, like, 8 quadcopters floating around you.
Crowing you, and they're snapping their pictures, and they got the flash on because you got to get the good picture. And you're just like, EMT school did not prepare me for this, man. I don't even know. That went to a sad place. Let's go to a happy place.
Yeah. I don't know if I can. Oh, well, it's kind of happy. Freeze-dried poop pills tested as a solution for reversing obesity.
It went to such a happy place. Did I clip there?
No, okay. You're good. This is a thing that has been around for a little while. It's pretty recent in treating things like Crohn's disease, mm-hmm. the fecal transplant. They're quickly realizing that the biome, I guess, the natural flora, natural fauna, they call it natural flora, but they're bacteria, so I think they're technically fauna. Anyway, the bacteria that live in your body, and particularly in your stomach and your digestive tract, have a huge impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're finding that they can often reverse problems like Crohn's disease by giving healthy gut bacteria from another person, mm-hmm. in a transplant to a person with Crohn's disease or C. diff or something like that. But this is the first time they have started looking into it to treat obesity, and they're looking for people, volunteers, for a weight loss trial where you swallow pills, which is actually, it sounds super gross, because it is. Mm-hmm. And imagine burping after taking someone else's freeze-dried poop. Don't imagine it too much. But this is the first time they've been looking at it for sort of commercial applications, mm-hmm. that aren't just like, hey, do this thing. Because before it was like, find a match or make sure someone has been rigorously tested and has very good healthy gut bacteria. And there's a whole screening process. And then they have to, but pretty much the only way, as I understand it, the only way they've been doing it up to this point has been a nasogastric tube where they shove a pipe up your nose and then all the way down your throat through your nose until it's in your stomach. So it's like you're eating it, but you don't actually have to eat it. But it's basically just like a shaken up poop slurry from someone else that
nasty.
They shoot into your stomach. And then it, you know, the good bacteria kind of balance out whatever, mm-hmm. and your biome and your stomach changes. And then you get healthy. So now they're doing it for weight loss.
Science is weird.
It is super weird.
I feel like I would be hesitant to take a poop shot or a poop pill.
I would not take a poop shot. Which kind of either type of shot, I would not do that.
Yeah, neither would I. Yeah, let me reiterate. I would not take a shot of poop.
Nope. No needles, nope. No liquor glasses if poop is involved.
Nope. I don't want any of those. But I don't think I'd take a... I would be like, Doc, are there any other options aside from the duty pill?
Yeah.
And like if he was like, nah, man. You're eating poop today.
You're up. I listened to the a few years back now, well, it was when it came out a few years back. I heard it probably more recently than that. The Stuff You Should Know podcast. Mm-hmm. Check it out if you like to learn things from people who are pretty funny and educational. They talked about fecal transplants and they kept referring to it as a poop shake. Are you going to drink someone's poop shake? So gross.
Nasty.
But that is pretty much how they did it, because like they had to blend it up so it was liquid enough with some other stuff, and then.
Now is that related to like doing colon fecal transplants where they push it up your butt?
I don't think they do that.
They don't do that at all. That's not a thing.
I'm not real. I can't say 100% that they don't, but my thinking is there's so much lower digestive tract to get through that going from that end wouldn't be feasible because it needs to get up to the point where the.
Isn't the rectum really good at absorbing stuff out?
It's good at absorbing stuff into your bloodstream, but that's not where you're putting it.
Oh, okay.
It's supposed to be part of your digestive system.
I thought it was good about absorbing stuff from your into your bloodstream because, like, frat boys used to butt chug vodka.
Butt chug.
And I'm like, so that would make sense for poop too. Only you don't want the poop in your bloodstream.
I like how many things we learned that are the same for completely different reasons. Like, I know about the efficacy of the rectal route for drug absorption because I went to paramedic school, and you know because you went to regular college and apparently knew people who did something called butt chugging.
Nobody I knew.
I don't believe that for a second. I've met your college friends.
Nobody I knew ever claimed or admitted to having butt chug.
Okay.
It was always a sense of somebody.
To you.
Right. Somebody else at a different house or a different school had butt chugged.
Uh-huh. Let's move on.
Next article. This one comes from The Atlantic, which is actually a fairly reputable news source.
Ocean. Sorry.
And it's entitled Physicists and Philosophers Hold Peace Talks, which is good because the physicist-philosopher war had been claiming far too many lives and gone on for much longer than anyone would have anticipated.
The bloodiest war, not between nations or, you know, people like non-chosen people groups, you know, like you're not necessarily born a physicist or a philosopher. That's a choice, you know.
You decide to be. And that makes it all the more bitter of a feud.
Yeah.
Because you can't back down without giving up, without admitting you were wrong to be a philosopher or a physicist in the first place.
Yeah.
We've all lost somebody in this conflict. And so it's good to see them coming to the negotiating table.
In the Physlossicist War.
Which sounds like a dinosaur.
It should be.
It should be Physlossicist with its terrible crest, its claws. And yet, a gentle plant eater for all of that. Let's meditate upon this.
Oh, that's what you do when you meditate, right? You make like a weird noise.
Is that racist?
I don't think so.
Okay. So yeah.
It's called the mantra.
Oh, I don't know much about meditation.
Okay.
So physicists and philosophers held a conference. There was a conference with both physicists and philosophers at it, which more or less boiled down to maybe philosophers have something useful to say to physicists.
Does it go both ways?
No, because like the crisis.
Take that, physicists.
As two physicists said, is the wildly speculative nature of modern physics theories, which they say reflect a dangerous departure from the scientific method. Many of today's theorists, chief among them the proponents of string theory and the multiverse hypothesis, appear convinced of their ideas on the grounds that they are beautiful or logically compelling, despite the impossibility of testing them. The argument runs that philosophers are extremely good at being ridiculously pedantic about definitions and processes. It's like, no, that's not actually evidence. That's just, yes, it fits, but it doesn't have evidence. So nope, it doesn't fit the criteria we've established. So nope. And so they're useful for that purpose of just, you know, doing the things that you think of when you think annoying philosopher. And these two physicists have the thought that maybe that's what we need to stop having all of these theories that aren't based on experimental evidence and can't actually have experimental evidence because you can't perform an experiment at the moment to prove or disprove string theory. You just sort of have it. Keep in mind, I'm neither a physicist nor a philosopher. I am a Libra, so I can't really... I may be getting some of this wrong. Interesting article, though. Cool stuff. Definitely worth a read, I think.
Huh. That seems... I feel like that article does not explain at all what it claims in the headline.
Well, I mean, the article opens with a quote from Richard Feynman that physicists need philosophers and historians of science like birds need ornithologists.
Yeah, that sounds like Richard Feynman.
Yeah.
In that he is a douchebag.
Right. So the idea being that physicists have long kind of disparaged philosophy mm-hmm. and philosophers been like, you can do your thing, but we don't really care. Whereas in actuality, there was probably a contribution philosophers could be making that physicists might find helpful, which...
That is a big step if it's actually the case that physicists, rather than a couple of physicists...
Rather than the physicists who happen to be at that conference.
Yeah, feel that way.
Yeah. And so the thought being that philosophers can help by clarifying terminology or insisting on clear terminology and, you know, being very picky about definitions and you know, philosophy.
No offense to philosophers, but I feel like also just like people with language,
mm-hmm.
I don't even want to say degrees, just experience could do that maybe also.
What do you mean? I'm not sure I follow experience.
Like people who are good at language could mm-hmm. just be like, hey, no, define your terms.
Yeah. You know, you would be, it sounds like a douchey thing to say to just be like, you need somebody who knows a lot about language in this situation, but like...
Linguists, that's a word I could have used.
That's more the...
I know, that's more the study, but
more the study, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like so many times in just like ordinary day-to-day corporate life, I find myself being like, if we were all just one step better at using English, none of this would be a problem.
Honestly, lawyers probably mm-hmm. would be very good at that. Because
oh, yeah, absolutely.
They have to... explicitly define terms in such a way that they can't be interpreted any other way.
Mm-hmm. That's a
in
lot of
writing.
A lot of lawyers come out of a philosophy background for that exact reason, because that's what it does. It's all about thinking about words and definitions and.
I'm super interested by that, but I also find it immensely frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
People who listen to the podcast or have ever had a conversation with me probably notice that I will stop myself mid-sentence 6 times. To correct something that I think another person may have misperceived me mm-hmm. as saying, rather than just finishing my friggin' sentence, which makes it very frustrating for me to listen to my own sentences,
mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to have that conversation. And so I do the legalese, or I guess philosophery, constant correct. Not this. Here's another caveat, and here are 6 more.
Right.
Please don't start that conversation. I don't want to have it. This is what I actually meant, sentence.
I run into that problem sending emails at work where I'll spend, for what is a very innocuous task, and a ridiculous amount of time composing my email in such a way that I feel I have been as clear as I can be about it. Like, I've defined my terms, I've made sure that I introduce any caveats.
Yeah.
And then the person just comes back with...
Okay.
With a complete misunderstanding of what I was talking about. And I'm like, maybe if... people read it above a third grade level, this wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, it could be. Well, we have one last article, and we're going to keep it at the highfalutin.
Is it about philosophy?
Oh, it's so much. It's about literature and prose. Well, not prose, but poetry. About an Ohio judge using verse to deny a lawsuit.
It takes place in Ohio?
I know, it's the worst place that there is.
Ohio.
In Columbus, Ohio, no less, the capital of Ohio. A judge in Columbus wrote a poem to let a prisoner suing the Ohio Ohio penitentiary for emotional distress know that his lawsuit was being denied, and read it in court. Franklin County Commons Pleas Judge David E. Kane, 72 years old, dismissed Derek Lathan's lawsuit seeking $2 million in damages over a denied bathroom break. I feel like everyone on both sides of this case is just a dick.
Amazing.
Plaintiff, an inmate at the Correctional Reception Center in Orient, near Columbus, Ohio, filed 3 civil lawsuits against the prison in October. The case before Kane, the judge, involved an accident Lathan had when a guard did not let him leave a line to use the bathroom. An accident. That's what we called it in elementary school.
You made a little duty.
In your drawers. He wrote a poem, the judge did, and it is as follows.
Amazing.
Cold showers caused his bowels to malfunction, or so the plaintiff claims. A strict, uncaring prison guard is who the plaintiff blames. He actually wrote whom the plaintiff blames, which is wrong. While in line for recreation and little time for hesitation, his anal sphincter just exploded, the plaintiff's britches quickly loaded. It made the inmates laugh and play to see the plaintiff's pants this way. The foul, unsightly, putrid mess caused the plaintiff major stress. Claiming loss and shame to boot, the plaintiff filed the present suit, but the law provideth no relief from such unmitigated grief. Neither runs nor constipation can justify this litigation. Whether bowels constrict or flex, de minimis non curat lex, which is Latin for the law takes no account of trifles. He was saying it's basically a frivolous lawsuit. The real problem is that it was filed incorrectly and in the wrong court, plus filing three separate suits for $2 million because a guard didn't let you go and you decided, or maybe didn't decide, but probably decided to poop your pants. It's probably not a great lawsuit.
That's not a perfect lawsuit.
As already a person who has broken the law and gone to prison. I feel like the people on both sides of this are kind of being
like, you shouldn't let that guy make a dookie.
Yeah. Yeah. Prison guards, like, let him go to the bathroom.
Like, let him go to the bathroom. Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, he can do that and then come back and get in line and we'll all be good.
Yeah. Prisoner guy, it's not clear from the poem, but if you can hold your, don't just shit your pants.
Yeah.
Don't just don't do that. Don't be that guy. Like, just everybody, just don't be that guy.
Like, if it needed to go to court, like, maybe the prison and prison guard were in the wrong. That's entirely possible. Our prison system is pretty whack. But, you know, public defenders or whoever's in charge of this, can you file it in the right friggin' court?
Yeah, that's shameful.
Come on.
Shameful.
So,
there were some fresh rhymes in there. I like it.
I don't know. Some of the meter was pretty bad. I may have missed... You know where he started. He may have added some beats at the beginning or the end, but I feel like for a man, apparently he used to be a newspaper reporter and used to write song parodies for press events in the 1970s. So maybe he knows what he's doing, and I just missed it. Mm-hmm. Maybe he knew what he was doing; he was rusty, or maybe he wrote terrible song parodies.
That's possible.
But the meter could have used a little work.
Sure,
but, you know, it was a judge writing a poem about
one of
poop pants,
like funny, humorous legal. Decisions are amazing. When you get a judge who really just wants to go on a tear and just does not care anymore, it can be majestic. Like, I'm sure if you just Google humorous legal decisions, you'll find or funnily written legal court cases or whatever. You'll find some good ones.
This is one of those situations where, like, I know of like six of those, but I can't remember enough details to tell you about any of them.
There was one I read once where the judge repeatedly accused the lawyers of writing their decisions or their appeals in crayon.
Oh man,
it's pretty good.
That's rough.
Yeah, he was mad at them because like these particular lawyers had repeatedly just filed garbage stuff in his court.
I do really like it because especially in the United States, we seem to be so absurdly sue happy. I do really like it when a judge takes down a lawyer or a plaintiff for just frivolous lawsuits. That cracks me up. Almost every time, even if it's just like stern legal wording, I'm just like, "Huh, you dummy." Well, we are about 10-12 minutes over, so I guess we should be done.
Yeah, we better stop.
Unless you have another poem about poop,
In
which case we can keep going.
10 little poops all in a row, one splash down to the water below. On we go, cried the little poop's friend. As he plopped right down from a dude's rear end.
For a minute there, I thought you were making this up on the spot, and I was incredibly impressed. And then I realized, no, this is clearly bathroom wall graffiti.
I wrote that years ago.
You wrote that?
I came up with that. I emailed it to you at one point.
I knew I'd seen it before. Yeah. I just assumed.
No, that was something I wrote and sent to you and then committed to memory and then recited on the air just now.
Wow. You're an American hero.
Reference back to parental shame from earlier in the episode.
All right, let's get out of here. We really need to wrap this up. If you have poop-related poems you would like to share with us, we would love to read them. They probably won't fit on Twitter, but you can give it a go at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could send, no, post. You could post them in the comments on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com. You could post them on our Facebook wall at facebook.com/mildlyalarming. You could put them in the comments after a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also listen to us, but probably not review us, because they don't offer that ability on TuneIn Radio. And sooner or later, we will also be available for reviews and poop poems on Google Play Music. Google Play Music.
Or if you just scrawl your comment on any bathroom wall anywhere, I will personally find it. I scour those things for your feedback.
I'll find it. I actually have an album of just my favorite urinal wall graffiti. That is not a lie. I will put it in the show notes.
I did not know that about you.
I've showed it to you before.
True.
See you next week.
Cheers.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is pleased to announce that we are the first terrible podcast on the internet.
That's right. We are, in fact, the first podcast that you can grip between your fingers and, by pulling with steady force in a constant direction, remove us from the internet.
Just reach out to your computer, pinch a bit of screen, and pull gently away from cyberspace. The Mildly Alarming Podcast will detach from the internet, and then you can,
Well, it's obvious, isn't it?
Oh, clearly.
So obvious.
If your podcast would also like to be terrible, contact the Mildly Alarming Podcast in one of the 11 billion ways that we list twice per episode, because that way we don't have to come up with content.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast. Terrible podcast.
Oh no, my good man. Terrible podcast.